This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The UN hopes to turn to the future status of the vital port city Hodeida at talks on Yemen's war in Sweden after the two sides agreed to exchange lists of prisoners seen as a key confidence-building measure. The Red Sea city is being contested by the Houthi rebel defenders as fighters of the Saudi coalition back the Yemeni government. Houthi delegate Abdul Qadir Murtada said he hopes in 2 weeks' time there will be more information on prisoner exchange and hopefully a complete exchange in 45 days. More than 15,000 detainees are said to be involved. Johannes Brewer of the Red Cross hopes the fighting in Yemen will come to an end soon.
And if we do not see an end to the hostilities very soon, it's going to be a massive crisis. Even if we do see an end to the hostilities, it's still going to be incredibly difficult. If everything were to stop tomorrow, we would still have a very difficult time in addressing the malnutrition and the increasing risk of famine. If it were not to stop tomorrow, it's going to be still much more difficult.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is scheduled to take part in the final day of talks Thursday outside Stockholm. France has raised its security alert level following Tuesday's late-day attack on a Christmas marketplace in Strasbourg that left 2 dead and 11 wounded. The gunman, identified as Chekhot Cherif, remains at large.
C'est un homme très défavorablement connu.
French Interior Minister Christophe Castaner said the gunman is unfavorably known for civil law offenses for which he has served prison time in both France and Germany. A motive for the late Tuesday attack has not yet been made public. This is VOA News. In Brazil, a gunman opened fire inside a Catholic cathedral in the city of Campinas Tuesday, killing 4 as they prayed before turning the gun on himself. The shooter was identified as a systems analyst with no known criminal record. A Canadian court has granted bail to top executive Meng Wanzhou of the giant Chinese telecom Huawei following her December 1st arrest on sanctions violations charges. Meanwhile, a former Canadian diplomat, Michael Corving, has been detained in China, prompting the U.S. to consider a travel advisory for China. Robert Palladino is a U.S. State Department official.
We urge China to end all forms of arbitrary detention and to respect the protections and freedoms of all individuals under China's international human rights and consular commitments.
The U.S. is seeking Meng's extradition in a case that has angered China. British Prime Minister Theresa May is conferring with European leaders on ways to make her embattled plan on future ties with the European Union more acceptable to a skeptical parliament. She put off a crucial vote Tuesday after it seemed destined to certain defeat. Ms. May said her cabinet is preparing for a no-deal scenario when Britain officially leaves the EU next March.
We have already stepped up the no-deal preparations. That has been happening in recent days. But cabinet will be discussing what is the sensible thing for government to do, which is to make sure that those contingency arrangements of no-deal preparations are in place.
The EU insists there will be no renegotiation of the deal that took 18 months to craft. President Donald Trump met Democratic congressional leaders at the White House Tuesday and had a frank and open exchange as cameras rolled on border security and whether their disagreement will lead to a government shutdown. Mr. Trump spoke about the meeting afterwards.
We want strong borders. We want people coming into our country legally through a process. We want people that are going to love and help our country. And I don't think they feel the same way. Or maybe they just don't want us to get a vote. You know, it could be that, too.
Congress is facing a December 21st deadline to approve a spending measure, including border wall funding, or face the prospect of a shutdown. Two Russian cosmonauts spent 8 hours outside their spacecraft docked at the International Space Station to try to resolve the mystery of a small hole before the craft is scheduled to return to Earth next week. They plugged the hole and took pictures. Time magazine Tuesday named journalists, including the late Saudi writer Jamal Khashoggi, as Person of the Year. It is the first time it has done so for journalists in its 95 years. The U.S. Tuesday added Pakistan to its blacklist of countries that violate religious freedom. In an annual report, it said Pakistan has now designated a country of particular concern over its blasphemy laws. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, December 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Togo's opposition appeals for international help to stop a controversial election.
We know that if they do this election, it will bring violence. That's why we want international community. We want the United States of America to help us. Because our fight is a fight for democracy.
Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. Amnesty International expresses concern over violent protests in Togo. Zimbabwe's commerce minister will talk with us about reinvigorating a declining economy. More than 13 million school-age children in Nigeria are out of school. And Uganda's president opens a new anti-corruption office.
We defeated extrajudicial killings, we defeated roadblocks of the army, we defeated poaching. We are now going to defeat corruption and bribery.
Vice President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda and Sudan's new peace envoy is optimistic about peace in neighboring South Sudan. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. With just a week to go before Togo's controversial December 20th legislative elections, the main opposition coalition is calling on the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, and the United States to pressure the government from holding the election. Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson, coordinator of the 14-party opposition coalition, says many more people will be killed if the elections are allowed to take place. The appeal comes after the opposition says six protesters were killed by security forces and 100 more injured during protests on Tuesday in the capital Lomé and Sokode, Togo's second largest city. But Ajamagbo-Johnson says the violence will not stop the protest because the opposition knows the elections will not be transparent.
We've called for protest for 10 days. But the government said that we don't have the right to protest what we don't accept at all. And we've tried to organize, but they brought military to prevent us from doing it. And they are beating and killing people. I can tell you that today we have at least six people who died in Lomé and in Sokode, another city of Togo. We have at least 100 or more injured, and we have also about 100 people arrested. But we think that this violence will not stop Togolese people to continue to say, no, we don't want this election, because we know that the election will not be transparent. And what we don't understand is that we have some video who showed that the head of the army himself was one of those who killed demonstrators. So it's something for which we are asking the government to make inquiries and try to find exactly who are those who killed.
Bridget, as you said that your protest will continue, you have the right to protest, but the government says that you are not in the election and those that are in the election should have peace to be able to run their campaign. And the government feels that the protest is disrupting the campaign.
No, we are protesting peacefully. We don't have guns.
In the meantime, Bridget, the elections are supposed to be probably next week. Do you think you have succeeded so far, or will you continue to protest?
They have to stop this election, and we are appealing to ECOWAS. We are appealing to older branches from the international community and telling them that they should hear the voice of Togolese people. We are calling for the government to stop this process. Otherwise, we will have many, many people killed again in Togo. This is what we don't want. We know that if they do this election, It will bring violence. That's why we want international community. We want United States of America to help us, because our fight is a fight for democracy. It's a fight for universal values, and it's time to hear our voice.
Bridget, thank you very much again. We are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you again.
Thank you also.
Bridget Ajamangbo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Amnesty International says it is worried that violence from Togo's anti-election protest could get worse. Francois Patuel, West Africa researcher for Amnesty International, tells Ricky Stryak that those responsible for the violence must be held accountable.
Yes, so since Saturday, there's been at least 4 people killed. Two people in Lomé on Saturday, including a child who was shot, and 2 more people in Sokode yesterday.
What is Amnesty's reaction to this violence from security forces? Are there concerns that it will get worse as protests continue?
Well, the first thing is that we're asking for independent investigations, impartial and independent investigations into the deaths to establish the responsibilities. And for the suspected perpetrators to be brought to justice. There's been a video circulating on social media showing a black pickup with men in military uniform carrying firearms around the demonstration where one of the youth was killed. It's very important that there are investigations to be able to establish the responsibility. Unfortunately, Togo is known for its use of the military to quell demonstrations. This is something that we've been saying over and over again to the Togolese authorities. The military should not be used in the context of demonstrations. They are not trained to police demonstrations. This is the job of civilian authorities, and in particular, the police and the gendarmerie. It's extremely worrying, including because people are being shot in the streets by firearms, which are used both by the military forces, so caliber 12 firearms, but these firearms are also used by hunters in Togo. But it's in that context, it's extremely important to have these independent and impartial investigations in order to establish the responsibilities. There are videos circulating online, so this is something that can be used by the judiciary in Togo. We are in the process of authenticating these videos, but it's something that should be used by judiciary to act quickly in order to prevent any further casualties in the context of the demonstrations.
And these demonstrations, they are in protest to the current administration and the political crisis that's been going on for about a year in Togo. Is that correct?
These are youth protesters which have responded to a call to demonstrate by the opposition, who is protesting against the organization of the legislative elections. The opposition is considering that the conditions for free and fair legislative elections are not met, that there should be continued dialogue with the authorities before, or that there are contentious points that should be addressed before these elections are happening. And they are currently scheduled on the 20th of December, and they're calling for a postponement.
The level of violence seems to be increasing in the country. Is that correct?
Well, over the last few years, we've been recording many deaths during the demonstrations. Last year, we registered at least 10 deaths in the context of demonstrations. There's been a death also this year. As the elections in 2020 are approaching, political tensions are rising. So yes, the situation is quite unstable.
That was Francois Patuel, West Africa researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Conakry, Guinea. You are listening to Daybreak on the Voice of America. Today is Wednesday, December 12th. I'm James Butte in Washington. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has opened a new anti-corruption office in the country. According to the president, the new office, equipped with modern technology, will coordinate with other existing offices of the government, like the Auditor General and Inspector General, to handle corruption cases. Mugumi Davis Raquel Ridge reports from Kampala.
Mr. Museveni says his government will use the new office to wipe out corruption out of Uganda. He says corruption affects service delivery within the country. Museveni says he has all the needed resources to fight corruption.
We defeated extrajudicial killings, we defeated roadblocks of the army, we defeated poaching, We are not going to defeat corruption and bribery. Nepotism, I think that one also will be handled, because people will report this person is employing only her relatives. So it will come also, even nepotism we shall defeat it.
He particularly pointed out that police, as one institution, that is ravaged with corruption. The new office will be headed by senior army officer, Colonel Edith Nakalema. President Museven says there will be toll-free lines and social media accounts like WhatsApp and Twitter where the public can convey their messages and complaints.
People had to come physically to come to the office. So I have got this problem, I've got this problem. That's what I suspect. So that's why we're saying, no, you don't have to come. You stay where you are and ring us. If you want to ring anonymously, you can ring. You don't want to reveal your name, but if you want to reveal your name, it's up to you.
Among the current institutions for fighting corruption include the Office of Inspector General of Government and that of Attorney General. Both have previously pointed out at a lack of resources as why corruption remains prevalent. According to the latest Transparency International report on Corruption Perception Index, Uganda is among the highest corrupt countries globally and stands at 151 out of 180 countries. Mr. Museven says he will not hesitate to sack any corrupt officials because there is simply enough labor force.
We have got hundreds of thousands of people, not with A level, not with one degree from Makerere, but with masters and PhD even. So we are no longer in a position to be blackmailed by a few corrupt people. We can sack all of them in one night and replace all of them without shedding any sweat that we are looking for replacements. We have given them a chance. They have misused it. Too bad for them.
At 34, Botswana remains the least corrupt country in Africa and is followed by Seychelles at 36th position. At 48th position, Cape Verde and Rwanda also make it in the top 50 least corrupt countries in the world. Sudan, South Sudan and Somalia, respectively, are ranked as the most corrupt countries in the world. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Zimbabwe's commerce minister says the government is encouraging companies to venture into export-oriented businesses and generate much-needed foreign currencies in order to reinvigorate the country's declining economy. Nkubizita Magiliso Novu says the move would also ensure that companies are self-reliant instead of depending on the government for foreign currency allocations to conduct their operations. Novu spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe's service about challenges and the businesses face.
We are addressing on a number of fronts, among which themselves, captains of industry, we are also trying to encourage them to venture more into export-oriented businesses, because that is another way of getting more foreign currency. You know, our situation is a bit different from many, where the private sector has to rely on government for foreign currency, and government has limited revenue streams from which it gets the foreign currency.
And one of the complaints we are hearing, Honorable, is that those who are not exporting, like Coca-Cola, are saying now, ever since there was a change in policy, they are now struggling because they are not exporting anything, but they still feel that they are essential and they need that foreign currency.
That is not true. Actually, there are companies by nature who do not export, Delta being one of them. You know, the way Coca-Cola structures its contract, especially when I'm talking of the fizzy side, you go to Manicaland, I'm not sure if you have been there, Delta does not supply Manicaland with fizzy drinks. It's supplied by a company called, it's Mutare Bottlers or Manicaland Bottlers. The whole province is supplied. Coca-Cola demarcates your market. So we can't go to that company and say they should export because it is demarcated. Now, we have got products that we have prioritized as essential products. When you look at things to do with sugar, mealy meal, cooking oil, those companies are supported by government, are prioritized, not to say others are not. And we know that most of their production is towards domestic market. So we'll never say to them they have to export in order to get foreign currency. That is not a correct position. Delta itself, I think in the last 3 weeks, has received more or less the largest allocation in terms of those who are outside fuel, if I may say.
You have said that the solution would be to encourage exports. Of course, there is also concern that Zimbabwe is importing some products that it should not be importing.
I was getting to that. We are also, now this is specifically from my office, we have engaged a number of private players in respective value chains, pharmaceutical, fertilizer, cooking oil, wheat, potatoes, all these are things that we are importing and which we should not be importing. So we have put them together to say from primary production up to the end consumer, where are we lacking? Why are we importing? What do we need to do? And we are working around the clock to identify people who can make sure that these value chains get back to where they were. I don't expect that we will be importing soybean in the next 2 years. We will significantly reduce the import bill in terms of crude oil next year, but we might not meet the production levels that will maybe lead to self-sufficiency.
Nkubizita Mangaliso Lovu, Zimbabwe's Minister of Industry and Commerce. He spoke from Bulawayo with Blessing Zulu of US Zimbabwe's service. The newly appointed Sudanese peace envoy to South Sudan says his country will monitor the implementation of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. Jamal al-Sheikh says Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir is committed to helping South Sudan peace partners work together to bring lasting peace to the country. Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Ambassador Jamal al-Sheikh was appointed Sudan's envoy to South Sudan in October following the signing of the revitalized peace deal on September 12. Al-Sheikh says the peace deal has silenced the guns across South Sudan.
The most significant part that we think will lead to a sustainable peace is that parties are able to observe the cessation of hostilities agreement. Even though there are some minor sounds of guns in some parts, which is normal, but we still believe it will go. So we are happy to see some improvement on the security part in South Sudan, which is an indication that this peace agreement will hold.
The Sudanese diplomat admits implementation of the peace deal has some financial challenges, but says if South Sudanese leaders show a commitment to implementing the agreement, the international community might provide financial support for the activities outlined in the deal. Mayan Dud, South Sudan ambassador to Sudan, says the economic crisis in the two Sudans forced the warring parties to sign a peace deal.
Sudanese government was facing some economic challenges, and they thought if South Sudan is peaceful, it will also help them. Oil production will resume and it flows to the international market, and Sudan will get its transfer fee. South Sudan also was facing serious economic challenges. This situation forced them to accept Sudanese mediation so oil production could resume.
Hassan Haj Ali teaches political science at Khartoum University. He says the leadership of both countries should reactivate the cooperation agreement signed in September 2012 so that citizens of both countries are able to move freely along the border and create new businesses.
If citizens in the two countries are able to move without any obstacles, they are able to own property, or those who wanted to study or work are able to do so without any difficulties. This way, the general environment will no longer encourage violence. There will be shared interests. There are business people who would like to do their job, but they can't do it if there is no peace.
Haj says peace in Sudan and South Sudan will also help create stability across the entire East African region. And he says the recent peace accord reached between the government of Ethiopia and Eritrea sets a good example for Juba and Khartoum. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
A survey conducted by the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says the population of out-of-school children in Nigeria has risen from 10.5 million to 13 million, the highest in the world. Most of the children are in Nigeria's northern states of Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa, where Boko Haram insurgency has disrupted academic activities. Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
At this rural settlement on the outskirts of the Nigerian capital, widow Favour Shikan lives with her children after fleeing a Boko Haram massacre in Borno State 3 years ago. Most of the children here do not attend school, including two of Favour's children.
We are four in number, and two are going to school. The other one is small, actually. But even though she's small, she's has grown to the stage whereby she can go to school. If not the financial, like the two that are going, transport from here to Apo resettlement, every blessed day is not easy because there's no money due to our economy today.
Instead of going to school, Favour's children help her at home with house chores during the day while they wait for the others to return from school. Favour's daughter, Bright, has never been to school.
I want to go to school like my two older siblings so I can become something in the future.
Nigeria has the world's highest number of school-age children out of school, 13.2 million according to UNICEF. They're mostly girls who live in Nigeria's northern states where Boko Haram operates. The extremist group is violently opposed to Western education. It has destroyed many schools in the last 9 years and kidnapped schoolgirls. Education psychologist Mayowa Adegbile says there's an economic impact from the increase in out-of-school children.
People don't see that a girl going to school is important. It is very important because one day this girl will be a mother. And she's a mother, she will have children. But if she doesn't have basic education, she will not be able to conduct good business transactions. She won't be able to help her children in school.
Children under 15 make up 45% of Nigeria's nearly 200 million people. Aside from the impact of Boko Haram, Nigeria's education is not large enough, say experts. Only 7% of Nigeria's $24 billion 2018 budget is earmarked for education. And so far, there appear to be no new policies to boost education spending. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. With just a week to go before Togo's controversial December 20th legislative elections, the main opposition coalition is calling on the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, and the United States to pressure the government from holding the election. Bridget Ajamabo Johnson, coordinator of the 14-party opposition coalition, says many more people will be killed if the elections are allowed to take place. The appeal comes after the opposition says six protesters were killed by security forces and 100 more injured during protests on Tuesday in the capital, Lome, and Sokoto, Togo's second largest city. Ajamabo Johnson says the violence will not stop the protests because the opposition knows the elections will not be transparent. Meanwhile, Amnesty International says it is worried that violence from Togo's anti-election protest could get worse. Amnesty International says that those responsible for the violence should be held accountable. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has opened a new anti-corruption office in the country. According to the president, the new office, which is equipped with modern technology, will coordinate with other existing offices of the government, like the Auditor General and Inspector General, to handle corruption cases. That's it for this Wednesday, December 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.